Hello and welcome back to Hot Marriage, Cool Parents. It is your host, Doug Hayner. Jamie, again, has been really taking the twin pregnancy a little bit rough. We're currently at 14 weeks, which is super exciting. But you also realize that you only have two trimesters left, which really makes things, it puts things in perspective, I should say. We don't have a nursery set up. We don't have the space set up. We don't have carpet or rug set up. We don't have floor set up. We don't know what room they're going to be in. And granted, the babies, I guess in the past, have always stayed in our bedroom in a little nook or rocker, whatever they call those things. They've always been in our bedroom just because it's a little bit easier to keep them close and breastfeed. And, you know, Jamie's goal is to, again, breastfeed through the first year. So that's normally, you know, we don't keep the kids in our room for the first year. But it seems like it's going to be a full bed by the time that we get the twins here. And if you haven't seen or followed in a couple weeks, one of the babies is confirmed a boy. And we are so excited for that. Now, the second gender, we still don't know, but we do have the envelope. So Jamie got the blood test done. The greatest news that we've got thus far is the babies are tracking normal. The babies are healthy. The blood test showed no neurological disorders. Even the high-risk doctor said the babies look excellent. And he was very careful because we told him that even through the ultrasound and the information that he was going to tell us, we don't want to know the gender of the second baby, and we definitely don't want to know if it's fraternal or identical, because if it was identical, then we would obviously know that it was another boy. And there's a lot of different theories out there. When we posted our last YouTube video, Jamie has this nub theory. She says that she was right about Hendrix and Henley. So I'm not sure about it. Looking at an ultrasound, there's a lot of different nubs that stick out. So she seems to think that from what she saw, based on the baby's nub, that it could possibly be a girl. I guess it's 50-50 at this point, really. But we are planning to do another gender reveal for the second baby, which is really exciting. And I just hope that this time around, I don't know if we're going to do the same thing, but the last gender reveal, we had a tic-tac-toe board and we involved the kids and they were able to switch the colors around, and it turned out to be three blue colors in a row, which meant that we were having a boy, or at least one boy. So I think we're going to try to reuse the tic-tac-toe board and just switch around the colors and keep Henley and Hendrix involved. I know that Henley was a little disappointed last time because she originally said boy, girl, and then she really wanted two girls or two younger sisters to take care of. So when it was a boy, I think she was just a little taken back. I don't think she was ready for that surprise. I don't know if she actually thought through what if it is a boy. I don't know if you know, kids that are 6 years old, if they kind of think through that. You know, sometimes I don't even think through that. But, you know, in my head, you know, when you go through losses, and we lost our son Jonathan at 19 weeks, we've had other losses, you tend to be guarded for the early parts of pregnancy. And I remember with Hendrix, it wasn't really till the third trimester where everything sort of got a clean bill of health and was tracking normal, where I really got excited and it felt real. This past 12-week, 13-week appointment that we had, it started to feel real. The babies, you can see little hands, you can see little feet, which was pretty amazing because apparently from the ultrasound tech, they said it was about, you know, the babies are like 3 inches tall or from head to butt. Which is crazy. And Jamie's starting to show a little baby bump, which is really, really exciting. But I don't know how Henley's going to react if it is another boy, which will be really interesting and exciting. Something that I'm not so sure about is Jamie's really putting it out there that if it is another boy, we may have to try for another girl, which I think I'm done at four. I really do. I don't know. I didn't anticipate going past three. you know, but really with twins, it's such a blessing, and I'm so excited for four. Five is, I think, a different story. I think five brings on different vehicles, different equipment in your home, different grocery bills. I mean, there's a lot that comes with the, you know, I don't know if it's the same with between three and four or two and four, obviously, but five just seems chaotic. And for those that have five, God bless you. I don't know if I could deal with five, but you know, as parents, I think we do figure it out always. But before we get to, and I do want to go over the Married at First Sight, the part one of the reunion, because I have some really, I don't want to call them upsetting or disappointing thoughts on this season. But I think it's clear that something needs to be updated or changed with their casting process. I'm no expert. I'm just basing this off of the last couple seasons and possibly offering some new ideas or going back to its roots to help more couples going through the process. So I do want to share my thoughts on the most recent episode. I think it was episode 24, which was the Denver part one reunion. But I do want to give a shout out to our five-star review from Sarah Wynn 1, who says, "Thank you for shining a light on foster care. I followed you guys from the beginning and just love your family. I've also been a foster parent for the last 6 years. We have two biological children and had the honor to adopt our six-year-old. We also had the privilege to parent 11 foster children over the years. Your most recent podcast really struck a chord with me. There are so many misconceptions and lack of understanding regarding foster care. Our current placement of two-year-old twins is on the path to reunification with their parents, and there is no way to describe the feeling that comes with walking alongside a family seeing healing. I came into foster care with a heart to help children, but had no idea the change God would put in my heart to really see an entire family restored. This has been the hardest but greatest thing our family has ever done. I would encourage any and everyone to consider looking into how they can support children in foster care, and there are so many ways to help. Thank you again so much for starting this conversation." You know, and what she's referring to is we had our former assistant and now a close friend, and we kind of consider them family, Diana, who started out as part of the team working for Jamie, working on our early episodes of the podcast. And her and her husband have just done some incredible work. Her husband went through Bible school, is now a youth minister in Georgia. And, you know, the level of just need and desire for service is just so admirable. And you always talk about foster care and adoption, and you never, you know, anybody that's in that world, you obviously know about it. But if you're outside of that world, you don't know that these places really exist. And I certainly didn't. And maybe I'm in the minority, but I had no idea that there were these group homes and people like Seth and families that were just donating their time and their energy and their emotions and their love to children that aren't theirs and helping to reunite them with families and getting them ready to be, you know, members of society and really teaching them and raising them as, you know, a parent would. I mean, Seth and Diana, they were in their 20s and they just had a newborn where they were just raising kids. And it was a really wonderful opportunity to get a chance to talk to Seth about the group home experience, the organizations that are out there, the foster care system. And it's just so nice knowing that there are so many people out there that just have hearts of gold and just contribute their time and want to be of service. And you know, there's people that do service for recognition, and there's people that do service because they feel like it's their calling. And that is Seth and Diana. And I imagine a lot of people that are in these group homes and in foster care it's really amazing that there are people out there that care so much and don't expect anything in return, because it doesn't seem like it's an easy job at all. I don't think if I was 22, 23, 24 years old, I would have even been mature enough to have, you know, a group of kids that were looking up to me for guidance. I don't know if I would have been in that place, but they were, and thank God they were. You know, and they really see that as their calling. So I really appreciate Seth coming on and being able to share that side of it. You know, and we've talked about church and, you know, bringing religion, or I should say, you know, bringing going back to church into our lives and praying. And, you know, it just, you start to notice things, and you know, when good things happen, instead of it just being, oh, maybe it's a right place, right time, you start to get a feeling like, you know, you were meant to be there. You were meant to be in that position. You were meant to be, you were meant to talk to that person. You were meant to help that person. And, you know, it's just, you know, ever since we started going back to church and praying, it's really had an impact on how I view life. I've been a happier person. I've been wanting to help more, help strangers, help people. So, you know, we thank Seth, and for anybody that's out there, like Sarah, that is donating their time, their family, their energy to the foster care system, adoption, you know, God bless, because it really does make a difference. And you never know if you're not in that world that it's making a difference. But I really do think that, you know, it's something that should be more, that should be talked about and discussed a little bit more. So that was an amazing conversation. Okay. And now I want to quickly transition to season 17, episode 24 of Married at First Sight. Well, actually, let's stop right here, because I do want to give a quick thanks to our friends over at Honey Love. Now, Honey Love has been Jamie's go-to shapewear anytime she gets dressed up. She even wore it on the special, the cast tell-all special that we're going to be on for Married at First Sight, which you can actually watch on April 3rd. But I know she got the queen brief, and I know that because I do the packing whenever we go away. So that's the shapewear that she loves. It has the compression areas, and it compresses areas that need more support. It doesn't sacrifice women's natural curves, which I absolutely love. The best part is, and what Jamie raves about, is that they have this flexible boning in the side seams, which makes it so it doesn't roll up or down, so you don't have to adjust yourself all the time. And there's no struggle in taking this shapewear off. I know Jamie used to wrestle with her shapewear anytime she needed to get out. You won't have any of that. And because shapewear shouldn't be hard. Honey Love products make you look good, feel good, whether it's for a wedding, event, or an everyday boost of confidence. Honey Love should be your number one, and you can treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market. Go and save 20% off at honeylove.com/HMCP. You can use our exclusive link to get 20% off. That's honeylove.com/HMCP. And after you purchase, if they happen to ask where you heard about them, you could tell them we sent you. So shape your life with Honey Love. Go to honeylove.com/HMCP. That's HONEYLOVE.com/HMCP. Okay, let's get back to it, which is, I believe it was part one of the Denver reunion. And what a disappointing season. And disappointing in the sense that they genuinely found a cast of people that were doing more work behind the scenes, trying to figure out a way to not look bad on camera and not expose themselves on camera. They were putting more effort into that than their actual marriages. And that's what frustrates me the most. The fact that you can get people that say they want to be married, say they want to go on the show, say they want to take a chance at love, take a chance at fate, find a person. You know, when you go through the process, it's an opportunity for you to really get to know yourself and what you imagine your perfect person to be. And if you don't paint that picture and you don't give hard deal breakers, that's on you for whoever you get. Well, I shouldn't say it's all on you, but most of that's on you. If you say that you don't want someone that's over 5'6", if you say you don't want someone that is, you know, in this profession, or you don't want someone that's this ethnicity, you got to understand that this is marriage. And you know, the sanctity of marriage going into it should be your priority. And you do have an opportunity to tell the experts everything about you, everything about what you want, many times. And you know, I've always said this about the casting process, is if you're going on Married at First Sight for the right reasons, something hasn't been working in your dating life, in your love life, something hasn't been working. So you may think that you know what you want. You may think you know the type of person that you want, but that hasn't been working out for you. So even if you don't know necessarily what you're looking for, what you imagine your wife to be or your husband to be, the experts ask you close to 6 hours of questions, personality assessments, personality traits, psychological backgrounds, and testing. And you have all this information for them to be able to match you up with somebody. But they do stick to your deal breakers. If you're very specific about your deal breakers and there's something that you just can't move forward with, then say it. But if you're not honest in that process, you're not going to know what you're going to get. Two, exactly what happened for this season. You're going to be more worried about what you're going to look like on camera, what the aftermath is of being on the show, whether you're going to be portrayed as a good person or a villain. The show is not out to get you. And that's what I don't understand. What came out in the Denver reunion was they spent time strategizing on what information to hold back from producers, what information they wanted to provide to the public. They had this whole misconception that the narrative would get spun, the producers in the show would spin this story about you that wasn't true. That's not always the case. That's not Married at First Sight. That's not this show. Okay? If you act like a douche on the show, you're going to be portrayed as a douche. If you act like a nice person, a genuine person, you're honest, open, real, they can never portray you in any other way. The fact that we had so many cast members that were just going along with these stories and strategizing about who they want to be, what storyline they want to do. Okay, we're not going to get married on, you know, we're not going to stay married, so let's figure out a way to play characters on the show. That's not going to work. That's why this season was a disaster. You know, maybe there were a couple people that were wanting marriage and would say that they want marriage, but you had a bunch of people that gave up too fast, that weren't honest with themselves, that didn't work the process, they weren't honest with the experts, and they gave up right away. Right away. You know, if you don't like the person, that's one thing. If you don't feel safe around the person, that's one thing. But if you don't give it an effort, how can you really know somebody? How can you really get to know them? You know, and just speaking from experience, Jamie and I, the only strategy we had when we were going on Married at First Sight was, let's be the same people on and off camera. We don't want to have to guess who you are on camera, what you're saying on camera, whether it's truthful or not, whether you're sincere, and then you're a whole different person off camera. Be the same person. Which brings me to the reunion episode, which it should be labeled Liars and Truth Tellers. And what I got from the episode is that you can't tell who's a liar and who's a truth teller, because the guys have one story, the women have another story. You know, whatever you try to hide during the season, and if you're strategizing with your partner, that's going to come out eventually. If it's not on the reunion, it's the 6 months later, or you know, different interviews throughout the season, all of that's going to come out. If you really want to control the narrative of your time on Married at First Sight, then just be yourself. Be honest. Be open. Be vulnerable. Try. I didn't see anybody really trying this season other than early on. You know, I think Lauren was in it for the right reasons. I think Emily was in it for the right reasons. I think Claire and Cameron, they gave up on day two. And, you know, I always thought that Cameron was the good guy in all this. And I'm after the reunion, I'm just not sure. But I just couldn't tell between if Claire really had a boyfriend that she was still in love with, if she was sleeping with somebody during the process. You know, when this whole season just brings me back to the point of why are we letting the couples get so close to each other? When you went to that reunion, and this is a perfect example, you had guys on one side, girls on the other side, girls all wearing pink standing in solidarity. And it gave me vibes from season two of Married at First Sight, where the girls just all banded together, and then it was them against the world. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying when you allow those relationships to build, other couples' problems become your problems. You start to compare. You start to compare what you're doing, what they're doing, if you're in love or not in love, and they're in love, or you know they're making out and you're not at that point yet. There's no way to not compare. But to let these couples get so close to each other and form these bonds, like do that after the show. Married at First Sight focus should be on marriages. The process hasn't been working. Allowing couples to go on honeymoons together. And yes, there's been a couple, you know, couples that have lasted. Great. Majority haven't. In these last two seasons, there hasn't been anybody that stayed together. And I don't know whether it's a casting pool, whether those are the only people that really applied for the show, whether those are the only men and women that applied, and that was the group that you had to choose from. But I think having the couples all get together, go on a honeymoon together, exchange phone numbers, hang out together, not stay in the same room or the same house as your spouse, all of that I think is a recipe for disaster. What really helped Jamie and I stay together, and I can't speak for other couples that have stayed together, but there's a lot of happy couples that have still stayed together from Married at First Sight. Jamie and I don't think it would have helped if we knew Jason and Courtney, if we knew Vaughn and Monet and all hung out together. I don't know if that would have helped. But I can say now that, you know, it didn't hurt. I mean, it actually worked for Jamie and I. You know, it actually worked for Jason and Courtney for 3 or 4 years, you know, at least until they split up. But having the couples get to know each other and form relationships outside of their marriages, the focus doesn't become marriage. It just becomes one house of people that are either hooking up or not hooking up, staying together or not staying together. The focus hasn't been on marriage. And yes, the experts are there and they're helping, and they can only go so far as giving you tools, giving you things to homework to do at home. If you're not going to do the homework, or if you don't think that you can give the effort and the energy, then don't go on the show. Don't go on the show. And I really hope that there are changes for next season of Married at First Sight, because I would love to invite more couples to, you know, the Married at First Sight family. I mean, everybody's part of the family if you've been on the show, but you know, the ones that have stayed together, you know, I there hasn't been any in a couple seasons, and I just can't help but think if the process now is not working. You have 5 couples, 6 couples, whatever it has been, that are all forming friendships, forming cliques. At that point, it's like a Real World house. It's like a Road Rules house. You just have a bunch of people live. Why not just have them all live together at that point? When you don't focus on marriage, you can't focus on how to build a relationship, how to build a friendship from ground one, how to lay your groundwork and foundation of your relationship. When you're talking and being part of other married at first sight couples relationships. The focus has to be on you and your marriage. It has to. You're strangers that are getting married and being forced. Well, not so much forced, but you're strangers that are getting legally married. And that should mean you would want to spend every waking moment to try to get to know that person or to learn everything you can about this person. Because there's a reason why you guys were brought together. There's a reason why you were chosen for the show. There's a reason why you were matched with that person. There's a reason why the experts picked you. But if you're deceptive, if you strategize, if you try to hide things, never going to work. Focus on your marriage. And I think anybody that gets on this show has to know that going in. You have to know that. Focus on your marriage. Don't strategize. Don't hide things from producers. Don't put a narrative out there that, okay, this is going to make us look good. We don't like each other, but let's say that religion is our deal breaker, or you know, you're going to go to hell and because you're an atheist. All of that is just so much. It's just so frustrating for people that take the show serious. So frustrating. Because you shouldn't have been on the show to begin with. Maybe you went in with the right intentions, but if you're bailing out week one honeymoon, I don't get it. I just don't get it. But thank you for letting me rant for a bit. I know I really didn't get into specifics, but I really wanted to make that known because I think the process has to change. I think the married at first sight process of couples and how they view their marriage and how they work on their marriage has to change. I think it's my opinion that when you have couples focusing on their marriage and not getting together with other couples, building a foundation, when you're worried about other people's relationships, you cannot build a foundation with the person that you're now legally married to. And if you spend more time strategizing about how you want to look on camera versus off camera, it's never going to work. The person that you're with is never going to know what's real and what's not. And once you pass that point and you start giving a certain narrative on camera and then you're a different person off camera, there's no way you're being authentic, and there's no way your partner can ever think of you as authentic. I don't care if you're in it together and you spin the same story. That's too much work. That's too much effort. It's too much deception. And it always comes out. If you're a douche, you're going to look like a douche. If you're a douche and you try to act like a nice guy, by the end, you're going to look like a douche. That's my opinion. Anyway, thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for sticking with me through that rant. Next week's episode is going to be very special because we are going to do the gender reveal for baby number two, which I am so excited about. It could either be a boy or a girl. We never know. But stay tuned for next week's episode. And we love you. Stay safe and goodbye.